So now I know myself, I know what I'm good at, and I know the things that are really not good for me that will completely trigger me. I know that once a month, there will be at least 2 days of the week where I need to go to bed at 7:30 p.m., you know, and my whole family knows that. My children know that. Mommy, is it your bad day today? Yes. You're having a wobbly day today. Do you need to go to bed? You know, like, we have created this culture in our family where we understand that we all have strengths and we all have struggles and triggers. And that is very calming, that I don't have to change the world. I don't have to be the answer to everything.
So I've been fascinated for some time by one of the great tensions of our shared humanity, our propensity to experience at one and the same time both great love and great suffering, where we can find ourselves both holy and broken, hurting and healed. As a pastor, I've seen people face the worst moments of life and yet in them discover the greatest moments of their humanity, where suffering and struggle and injustice birth something profoundly honest and real and hopeful. If you're anything like me, I yearn to hear stories of women and men from around the world who have found themselves wrestling with God and as a result have walked away with a beautiful limp. I'm Andrew Gardner, and this is A Broken Hallelujah. Welcome back, my friends. This is episode 5, and I am so grateful that you're listening right now, that you're tuning in, and equally so grateful for so many of you who have reached out and emailed me or sent me an Instagram DM just to say how much these podcasts are helping you, how this is a part of your journey. For some of you, how these interviews with the people sharing their own stories of trauma has really helped to connect to your story. Really, I feel like in many ways, this podcast is achieving one of the aims that I had when we set it up a few months ago, which was just to really help people to guide through their worst moments of life and discover their greatest moments of humanity. And today's conversation really is the epitome of this. I get to interview a close friend. Her name is Jacinta Reed, and she's just put out a book called Patchwork Someone. And Jacinta has had a journey through her 20s and into her 30s of mental health, and in particular, a diagnosis with bipolar disorder. And she's had to journey through her faith in the midst of that. She's had to wrestle with the realities of church and how church is handled and how the church approaches people with mental health issues. And she's got so much to share with us, a lot of insight into her own journey, as well in the ways that churches can help. And also churches can hinder people's healing in mental health. Our conversation spans a whole bunch of different topics. We talk about how she wrote her book. We talk about her personal mental illness journey and her diagnosis. She's very frank and open about her attempted suicide. We talk about the secret side to mental health and why that is one of the dangers of it. And then we talk about what it is to live your true, authentic self. And in relation to that, how the church approaches the issue of mental health. And we talk very frankly about what the church does well, what the church doesn't do well in this area. Ultimately, we talk about her identity and what does it mean to hold an identity of somebody who struggles with mental health issues, and how that's really impacted her faith and the ways in which her faith is really today a beautiful manifestation of the wrestling that she's had to do through that. So I'm really excited for you to be able to hear this story, to hear Jacinta's insights and her honesty and vulnerability before us all. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jacinta Reed. Well, hey, Jacinta, it is so great to have you on A Broken Hallelujah. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew.
I'm really excited to just get into everything today. There's so much for us to talk about. I want to talk about, obviously, your personal journey, journey in your life, your journey with mental health, your book that you've written recently, which we'll get to in just a bit. But why don't you just start out by telling us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you've come from, and what you're doing and where you are now.
I'm Jacinta Reed. I am an author, illustrator, currently living in Oxford in England, but I was born and raised in Hong Kong. I'm half Chinese and half Welsh, and I'm a mum of two lovely children and wife to Thomas Reed, who was a former worship director at The Vine.
Yeah, great. So I guess maybe a disclaimer here. Jacinta and I know each other very well. We kind of grew up together in many ways. Was in the same church for many, many years together. And so there's just that personal connection that we've had for a long time. And I think because of that also, as we go through this conversation, it'll be interesting for me to reflect, I think, a little bit along the journey, because, one of the things that really stood out for me early on as I was reading your book. By the way, Jacinta's just released a book called Patchwork Someone, and later on she'll tell you how you can get your hands on one. But it's really a memoir of your life, and a memoir particularly, I guess, of your family backgrounds and then your journey with some mental health struggles. And it's incredibly brutally raw and honest and vulnerable. And one of the things I wanted to say right up front of this is just thank you for being so incredibly honest in the book. I think it's, for anybody who reads it, it's going to be very helpful for them to think about themselves and their lives and their vulnerability, but also for anyone who knows somebody that's going through a mental health challenge. I think your book will be very, very helpful in that regard as well. Obviously, writing something so personal is not easy. Talk us through the journey of writing this book, why you wrote it, and how you were able to sort of be so brutally honest in it.
Yes. Well, the process really started without me realizing I was writing a book. I have always been somebody who writes a journal or a diary. And that started from a very young age. And actually, it started with my obsession with Twin Peaks, and Laura Palmer had a diary, and I totally yes. nerded out on that and got into that. But so that's been a coping mechanism throughout my life. And so I was doing that all the way through my 20s when my personal kind of crisis happened. And I just did that to put all the crazy down in words. And that is just something that has been a help to me all along. And so there are just hundreds and hundreds of thousands of words of craziness and of drama that is not for anybody to see. Nobody's eyes will benefit from reading that stuff, including mine, really. But right. I needed to get it out of my head. And then it was not until probably a couple of years into my recovery, past the worst of it, where I realized that I had these hundreds of thousands of words sitting there that were not all rubbish, that there was something of value to be mined in there. And so I started pulling bits out to see if they were useful. And that is where the City University in Hong Kong started up an MFA, a master's course in creative writing. And my father-in-law said, "You like writing? Do this." and I was like, okay. And I thought, I'll just apply. And I got in. And then, that kind of bumped me further down this road of creating this thing. And when I got to the end of the master's, I had three really nicely polished chapters and not a full book. So there was this kind of like, now what? And so I just kept going slowly but surely, and ended up doing a PhD in creative writing, just pretty much so that I could finish this one book, because I wanted to see where it was going to go. And that was an incredible process for me. And the idea of actually putting it out to other people was very much an afterthought, to be honest. I went through many years of thinking, actually, nobody's ever going to read this and it doesn't matter.
Well, like I said, I think it is actually a topic that we need to be much more aware of, particularly for those of us that are in church, those of us that are embedded in a local community of faith. I think the area of mental health is one that seems to be relatively not talked about. It's kind of the mm-hmm. sometimes the elephant in the corner of the church room, mm-hmm. And we'll get to that a little bit in a moment. But before we dive into the book a bit deeper, for the people that are listening, tell us a little bit about what your mental health journey was. What was the particular issue that you were struggling with?
Yeah, I grew up in a very, quite an unconventional family, and a couple of my immediate family members had mental illness. My father was incredibly intelligent, a brilliant, brilliant mind, and he struggled with manic depression, as it was called when he was going through it. Right. Now it's called bipolar disorder. And so I kind of grew up in this environment where mental illness was very much a reality. And I, you know, made assumptions as a young person because I just assumed if it's in families, it's in families. I'm next. I'm up next. I could see which members of my family were very stable, and I could feel that I was not the same as them. So I assumed that meant I was next in line. And so when I hit my 20s, life was very, very good. You know, I was quite newly married and in a very stable, loving community in Hong Kong, and things were going very well. But I started to unravel on the inside and found myself very energetic and just kind of dissociating really from reality, where I had a lot of energy and I wanted to run and I got into physical fitness. And long story short is that I ended up with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder.
Right.
I was into self-harming. I mean, it's not something that you're into, but I did a lot of self-harming things. And that went quite out of control at one point, which landed me in the emergency room. And that's what kind of set me off in the direction of a diagnosis. Mm. And yeah, bipolar disorder was the answer. Right.
Now that's how you open your book. Actually, you open your book mm-hmm. With a story of your attempted suicide. I say that in sort of speech bubbles because that's kind of how you present it in your own language in the book. Now that's a crazy thing, and maybe for some people listening, you know, they're aware of a suicide narrative in their families or within their friendship groups. Could you tell us a little bit about that process, that journey? You know. What was it that kind of brought you there? Were you aware of that? Tell us a little bit about kind of that moment.
That moment, I was very sleepy. I had had a nap and I had woken up, you know, when you wake up in the wrong part of a sleep cycle, and I was just not quite there. And I was really angry and I was grappling with a whole bunch of really incoherent thoughts. And I can see that now, but of course, at the time when you're in the thick of a really bad moment, there's no perspective. And all I thought was, I feel like a volcano about to erupt. And I would do these self-harming things because that relieved that feeling a little bit. It was like a valve, like being able to turn a valve and let some pressure out. Mm-hmm. But because I was groggy and because I was so angry and just not in control, I pressed too hard with the knife that I was using, and it went out of control very quickly. Never once in that moment on that day did I think I'm trying to end my life. There have been many times where that thought does come, and I deal with that thought in different ways. But that day, I was just thinking I need to let some pressure out, and
right.
I was not in control of my body. And as soon as it happened, I realized that this was bad, you know, it was really bad. And, thank goodness my husband was there. He was at home and, was able to get me very quickly to the hospital, which also, thank goodness, was very close to where we lived.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you, was that a wake-up call for you, or were you so in a bit of a state at that time where, you know, you just kind of, it just kind of was something you had done and you didn't really fully grapple it, or was this a turning point in your mental health journey for you?
Absolutely. It was instant regret. You know, I don't know if you've ever dropped a phone and cracked the screen, or like just
many
something just where you're like, if I could just go back like 3 seconds and just grab it, or like not put it there, or whatever it was that you did.
Yeah.
Like I just kept thinking, I just need to go back like five minutes in time, and I would not do this. Like the regret was instant. And also it was like, you have blown it. You know, like if there is a road, you have just like leapt off the end of it. You are no longer, you are out of the game. You have mm-hmm. just disqualified yourself completely from all the things you thought you were going to do. You have now just made it that you cannot do that anymore. I've just like sat myself in the room with all the people who have failed. And so, instant.
I mean, that really did, I guess, you know, looking through the book, it really turns you into a fresher and deeper journey, I think, than your husband and yourself were able to sort of begin to share this with people around you. And it was the first time that you kind of begun to make it public, obviously, to trusted people that you were really struggling with something. And I think this was also the catalyst to you going to see a psychiatrist and beginning to work through that. And I think that's something I wanted to pick up with you a little bit, because it comes out in your book quite a bit, is the secret world of mental health, you know, where the person who is going through the mental health issue, often they're not maybe lucid about what's happening in the real world. And therefore, there's this, a lot of it is an internal thing. But then also, like, you know, your husband and others in your church community, you know, were they aware of this happening? And I think this is one of the real dangers of mental health, is that it can be such a private and secretive thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've learned about that now that you obviously have gone through that journey and you're kind of on the other side of it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think one thing that I would say as a takeaway is the idea of not being able to share with anyone. If you think about like a blackmailer or a bully or someone who says, if you tell anyone about this, you're going to get in more trouble, or or I'll hurt them, or they'll get hurt, so you can't tell anyone. That feeling is the first flag that needs to go up, because I did feel like that for a long time. There was all these thoughts in my head that were saying to me, you are special and you are ahead of the curve because you know these things. Everyone else doesn't know these things. I'm only telling you.
Right.
You've got inside intel here. And and to be honest, I feel like I've seen that look on a lot of faces where they kind of like not quite in the room, you know? And I was definitely like that for a long time. And as soon as I opened my mouth and said the words, it's like bringing something into the light, you know, like taking it out of the shadows and being like, let's actually have a look at what this is. And when I said to Tom, I'm pretty sure that God is telling me to go to Indonesia and die.
Right.
In my head, it was the most real thing in the world, and it was clear as day, and I had Bible references, and I had all these reasons why I was 100% correct. And he just went, that is BS. You know, that is wrong. Like, are you kidding me? And within a minute of us having this conversation, I was like, oh, it isn't right. You know, like just the reality of that. And so, yes, there's this huge disconnect between what's going on inside my head and reality. And then there's a big challenge of trying to align those two things, because sometimes reality is messed up, you know. We're seeing it in world politics, where you can convince yourself of pretty much anything you want to convince yourself of.
Right.
And so it really matters that there are people that you can trust and reach out to.
Well, I think also this kind of raises up something else that I think was really fascinating in your book, that I think actually speaks a lot to a context that both you and I are, and a lot of our listeners are very familiar with, and that is the church and Christian faith. Because, you know, obviously at the attempted suicide time, and then with the leveling up of the running and everything like that, the physical fitness side, you know, you were sort of in that sort of more of a, I don't know what the official term would be, but in that kind of elevated state, where there's more of a disassociation between reality and what was going on in your mind and you know, in your thinking. But also, what I think is so powerful in the book is that there's also quite a lot in there. Cause I think when you're leveling up like that, people can stand back from that and go like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's Jacinta having her mental health issue. But actually the foundations to a lot of this was kind of how you felt as a person within the church, where I think early on in the book, you talk about this tension that you had where you felt like you were almost living two lives, that you sort of felt like you had to be this kind of good Christian girl in front of your Christian community. And yet you were also this other person who was grappling with the reality that you didn't have it all together, and that there were some, you know, some problems and some struggles that you were going through. And it almost felt like you had to disassociate those two things. I had to be the good Christian girl on a Sunday, and yet I also know that I'm kind of a liar and I'm actually really struggling. And that was perhaps one of the foundations of the journey for you. At least that's how I saw it in the book. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think a lot of us in the church end up in that space. And it's an unhealthy space, but it's one that almost seems to get perpetuated in the church a little bit. What kind of reflections would you have around that?
You know, I think that that church is a really complicated thing in that we have this culture of sharing and testifying and talking about how much God has changed us and helped us and fixed us. And right. So there is this weird culture where we're like, yeah, I come from addiction and I come from this and that. And being almost loud and proud about that is encouraged because we're testifying about how God's saving grace. So there's that. And then there's like, you can testify to a certain degree, you know, like it's good to have struggled and right. to have come through. But if you are struggling here today, that gets a little bit awkward. You know, I don't know what to do with that. Or the harder thing is when we're like, oh, shoot, we need to help each other. We need to fix each other. And we jump into these roles that we actually aren't qualified to assume. You know, we start prophesying or we start counseling one another from a very sincere and caring intention, but not always equipped in the right way. So I think, you know, I never felt a pressure in Hong Kong, in particularly in our church, to put on a front that was like, I am perfect. My front was that I used to be really bad and now I've changed. And then there wasn't too much more to say after that point, because also I was leading a youth group and leading a dance team and in a position where we had grown up in this climate of wanting to be history makers and doing great things for God. You know, I am not dissing that song. I love that song, but I really took it at face value. I was like, yes, we must do great things. I am an example. I am going to change lives and impact everybody. Like, that was a huge pressure that I put on myself that I can't say anybody else told me to put on myself, but the climate that we subscribe to, you know, the culture of what we were into was all about that. And so I really took that to heart. And then that created an internal pressure that I was not equipped to handle. And I wasn't even equipped to ask for help. About.
Yeah. And I think that's, I think that would be a common struggle, to be honest, with quite a lot of people, you know, within a church context. And I think that reality is one that, again, just doesn't really get talked about a lot. You know, I think there is this kind of savior complex that I think a lot of us struggle with. It's like, you know, oh, well, I know Jesus, I've got all the answers for everybody.
Yes.
When actually, you know, we're then placing our, that almost becomes idolatry to some degree, at its worst, of course. You know, at its best, it can be a place of genuine wanting to, and desire to help and serve people, but at its worst, sure. It can become an idolatrous thing. Just with the church in general, I mean, what have you experienced as, obviously now as someone who has been through this mental health journey, you know, what have you seen that's really good in the church when it comes to addressing mental health and helping people with mental health? And what have you seen that is not so good? Because I'm sure, again, a lot of people listening to this, there are pastors that are listening to this. And I do think that the church needs to get better in this space. So what words of advice or thoughts would you have in that space?
I hesitate a little bit because I think we have to be really careful. I think we have to be careful, and I can only speak for myself. You know, I don't want to stand up here and try and represent everyone in the world who is having a mental health issue. Sure. So what was helpful to me was having a solid community that always said hi when I walked in a room and seemed to say, you know, how are you? How's it going? But also I was able to just kind of sit by myself in the corner and just be there without having to answer a lot of questions. You know, I went for very many years of not having to answer too many questions, which for me is what I needed. What didn't help was when people would kind of be like, well, you know, it's a lack of faith, or no, medication is not the answer, or they would give me their kind of their personal take on the wider issue of mental illness and where it fit in the faith community. That doesn't really help. You know, if you are trained in that area, or if you've done a lot of research in that area, that might be good if somebody asks for it. But often the person who, for me, when I was in the thick of things, I wasn't in a place where I could really compute a lot of the things that people would try and offer me in under the guise of help. And oftentimes it would leave me feeling worse because I'd think, oh, it is a lack of faith, or if only I could fast more, or if I could do this or do this differently, I'm the reason that this is happening. And actually, I'm out of God's will because things are not going well for me right now. The fruit of my life is not reflecting God's goodness at this minute. But I think what helps is knowing that we're all on a journey, you know, and you know, it doesn't end after you graduate from youth group. It continues, you know, people's marriages go through challenges and people's professional life and things like that. Yeah. We're all still learning and growing and changing and having grace for that and not having to give answers all the time, she says in a big long answer.
No, it's good. But I think you actually touched on something there that I think is absolutely critical, particularly when it comes to the church and mental health. And I think I've seen this dichotomy in my own church. I've seen it in other churches that I've been around and involved in. There's this dichotomy that exists in mental health where either you take a position where, well, this is 100% a spiritual issue. So this is basically demonic oppression. It's basically the work of the enemy. And the only, you know, the way to help somebody with a mental health issue is to cast the demon out, essentially. I'm obviously, you know, being a little bit facetious in that, but that's kind of one side of the argument. And then the other side of the argument is, oh, this is a chemical imbalance. This, you know, this just needs medication. I'm curious to have your thoughts on that, just because you're someone who's obviously been through this. How much of your journey do you feel was a combination of physical, chemical, emotional, spiritual? How do you see that in terms of your own personal journey?
I wish I had a really tidy answer for this. I think it's all and, you know, both and. It's not, we like to say it's this, because that gives us a false idea that we can control it or we can deal with it.
Right.
I think it's a big combination of all of those things. I think, and one of my doctors was very, I saw several different doctors over the years, and one of them said to me, oh, it's hardware or software. And then the next one said, okay, imagine there's like a rubbish bin outside the back of a restaurant somewhere. When there's stuff there, the rats will come, you know, it attracts more problems. And so he was kind of saying, like, you've got the hardware software issues as the rubbish, and then like the spiritual things are kind of the pests and the vermin that will come and take advantage of that, which I actually found very helpful at the time, because it's like, yes, there's a lot of different things going on here. What we need to figure out is, what do we deal with first, second, third, fourth, and there's like a hundred of things to deal with. And sometimes the medication needs to get in there very early to fix the imbalance, because how can you deal with, you know, traumatic childhoods or whatever you need to deal with if your immediate body is not, not on side.
Your husband features a huge amount in your book. You know, when I read it, I know your husband, Tom, very well. And when I read it, I you know, he comes across quite really like a hero figure. I know, you know, I'm sure you know that, you know, that Tom's not perfect. But he really does come out in the book like someone who really walked with you quite beautifully and graciously through this. I'm sure there were great moments and really difficult moments. Talk to me about the importance of having people in your life in the mental health area who can be that strong community for you. What was that like for you? And, you know, I think, again, there might be some people listening to this who are loved ones of somebody who's going through a difficult mental challenge or journey. So talk a little bit about the importance of like that close contact community of support.
I am so grateful to my people in life, and number one, Tom. Tom, the things that he brought to this story were complete stability and consistency and incredible boundaries. He never once tried to counsel me or reason. I mean, I suppose he reasoned, but he didn't try and do the job of the doctors or the the therapists. So that was good. He knew where he ended and I began, and he knew where the doctors needed to step in. And he was adamant about that. You know, there were many times where I was like, if I just push him a little bit harder, he will give me what I want. And what I wanted was like validation and like somebody to save me, basically. Mm-hmm. And he just refused. Like, he was like, no, I cannot do that. I do not have that in me. And that was the best thing that could have happened, because there are a lot of people, myself included, with the savior complex, who would have tried to answer all of those needs. And that doesn't help generally. So having a community that is apart from you, but also always there is amazing. And I really, that is my biggest hope and prayer for everyone who goes through these moments, these crises, that they can, that can happen within the safety of those relationships.
That's great. You know, I wanted to draw out a little bit around your faith. You sort of came into a Christian faith in your late teens, and then kind of throughout your adult life, you've been in a community of faith. And obviously going through something like this is incredibly dramatically changing of who you are. It's a discovery, a self-discovery, I guess, of yourself. And then it's a process of recovery from that. And I can only imagine that your relationship with Jesus has shifted and changed with the ebbs and flows of that journey. You know, when you're in your worst moments, and you look back on that now, how has your faith like changed or adapted, or has it grown? What have been the negatives and the positives about that walk with God throughout the difficult journey that you've been in?
I was so lucky at the beginning of my faith journey, because I was given a teaching tape, and I have no idea who was talking on it or what the subject even was. But one thing they said was to never confuse God and the church. They're two different things. The church can hurt you, people can hurt you, but God is God, you know, and his ways are not our ways, and you will not always understand him. In fact, rarely will you understand him in the moment. And so that kind of was this thought that was planted very, very early on. And so all the way through, I've had this ability to separate what's God and what's people. And I think that was a very helpful thing, because, you know, if you base your faith on what people do or say or don't do and don't say, there's a lot of, I don't know how that's going to work. So God has always been a very personal concept to me. I've tried, you know, over the years to subscribe to different types of Christianity and different styles of being. And sometimes that's worked really well, and sometimes it's been a disaster, where I've tried to fit into cultures that maybe were not so authentic to myself. You know, right. I can see that now. You know, now that I'm in my 40s, it's really easy to look back and be like, man, I was a real try-hard when I was 20. But when you're doing it, you're never going to admit that you're trying. You just be like, no, this is me. I'm totally like this. And
right.
And but just knowing that there's this constant loving figure there has always been quite consistent. And I'm grateful for the seasons of faith where I've been surrounded by really strong positivity and overcoming feelings, you know, and just, I needed that. But now I have calmed down a bit, and I think maybe this is maturity, just life, you know, number of years that you rack up on the earth, that I don't feel quite so so urgent and you know, passionate is not the right word, because like old me, past me will be like, oh my gosh, you're lukewarm now. I'm not lukewarm now. I've calmed down. I'm calmer now. And that serves me very, very well. And I think I'm actually a lot more able to be of service to other people now that I've calmed down, and I'm less fixated on being a history maker and being an impact, but more fixated on being myself and authentic. Again, I'm not dissing any songs. I love songs, but one line from a song that has popped up over the years in different places is, we want more of God and less of ourselves. And of course the sentiment is very accurate, right? I want to be less selfish and less, my bad self. But actually, if you were to take that logic to the nth degree, the end result God is after is not like the complete annihilation of me. and all of him. Like he made me because he loves me, and he made me very particular and very completely unique. And he wants more of me. I think he wants more of the real me and less of the rubbish that I've picked up along the way. And so that idea that actually I'm not a lowly worm. God actually likes me. Mm. And that is a helpful thing in my faith.
Do you see, and this is kind of a personal question and you can refuse to answer it if you want. but do you see yourself in with your mental health as like the wrong version of you? Or do you see it as in like, this is actually me? It's a part of who I am. It's obviously not my whole identity. It's not, you know, but it is also a part of who I am. And so not that you're necessarily proud of that, but it's something that you've come to accept. I mean, how do you see yourself that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't change it. That's a weird thing to say. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, and I also wouldn't change it. I think that there are parts of us that are, you know, indicative of the fallen world that we're in, and we are imperfect. It's not our job to be perfect. But I am who I am because of the things that I've been through and the things that the people I know and the experiences I have had. Mm. So I wouldn't change it. I know how to manage it. I think it's about playing the cards that you've been dealt. Okay. Now, if you want to ask, why would a loving God deal me these cards? That's a whole nother conversation. And everyone could be asking that about their various challenges. Right. So I don't really bother with that question because I don't see any reason to do that right now. Mm. But these are the ingredients I've been given. These are the colors in my paint palette. I will paint a picture with the colors I've got. And that helps me.
That's awesome. I love that idea of like different colors in your paint palette, and that in you're painting a story of your life or a picture of your life with these different colors. And some of those shades are dark, and some of those shades are bright. But all of it goes to create, you know, who you are. And that might be a very encouraging way for some people who are listening to begin to think about not just themselves, but also to think about those that they might have in their families that are going through mental health issues. I have to say, as a pastor, and this is just me being honest as well, my wife's a counselor, and, you know, she can sit with people who are struggling with mental health all day long, and it just buzzes her, and she just loves them and can connect. Whereas for me, it's a harder journey for me, I have to say, in that space. But I think just even that thought of like, wow, this is just some of the different shades of who they are, is in that color palette to paint life through is a beautiful image. So I'm grateful for that. One final question, really, and it's kind of a big one, but what would you say are some of the things that you've really learned about yourself in all of this? What are some of the things that, you know, you're like, you know, have just become revelations for you, for you as a mother, a wife, an artist, that this whole mental health journey has kind of solidified for you?
Strengths and struggles. You know, I have hit some limitations. I was raised to believe that there are no limits and that you can do everything you set your mind to and that everything is possible, which, again, you can flip things two ways. And I think the value of critical thinking is vastly underestimated in our world right now. And to think critically about things from all angles, yes, anything could happen. You could get hit by a bus when you walk out of your door, or you could win the lottery. You know, like there are no limits in some ways, but I needed limits. I found, I mean, on a very small level, putting these abstract ideas into words on the page is a container. You know, the words are a container. These big, scary thoughts, I don't know what they are, but if I write it down, they are now contained in ink on this page. And that is good. So now I know myself. I know what I'm good at, and I know the things that are really not good for me that will completely trigger me. I know that once a month, there will be at least 2 days of the week where I need to go to bed at 7:30 p.m., you know, and my whole family knows that. My children know that. Mommy, is it your bad day today? Yes. You're having a wobbly day today. Do you need to go to bed? You know, like we have created this culture in our family where we understand that we all have strengths and we all have struggles and triggers. And that is very calming. Like, I don't have to change the world. I don't have to be the answer to everything. But if you want me to write about this or draw this picture, I can do that. I will nail that. That is the thing I can do. But if you ask me to go beyond myself, like I guess it's just learning boundaries where I end, you know, where my abilities begin and end. And then being open to them being stretched. I am open to that. But it's about calming down for me.
That's really powerful. I just wanted to say, you know, as a pastor and as a friend, but particularly as a pastor of a church, I think your book is a gift. I think it's I think your journey, the way that you describe it in the book, your honesty in it, the fact that you really help to take the reader, you know, you don't really hide anything back. You really take the reader through the darkest moments, but then also into the place of recovery and hope. I think it's a real thing that we need to be reading in the church, and it's obviously a big issue that needs to continue to be brought into the light and not hidden into the corner. So I want to thank you for pouring, I know, what was years into writing this book and getting it ready and putting it out there. And so just as we close, how can people stay in touch with you? How can people follow you? How can people get your book? Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Such nice words. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram, and that's just Jacinta Reed, JacintaReed, for both of them. And I have made a Facebook page, but I have no idea how you find that. I'm also very inconsistent with all of that. I've got a website. Actually, no, I'm supposed to say this. My hub is my website, jacintareed.com. That's where you can find everything else. And I will be better at that very soon. The book is everywhere now. I think, you know, you can get it wherever you get books, on Amazon, or should be through bookshop.org as well. I'm not sure if that's a thing in Hong Kong yet, but it should be available. But you can also get it from my website if you want, like, the very special hardback edition. I still have a few of those. So that would be through my website, and through everywhere else would be paperback. There is an audiobook and there is a Kindle book. And yes, and you can always just ask me through any of those channels and I will do my very best to respond.
Brilliant. Well, it's highly recommended. It's called Patchwork Someone. Jump onto her website and grab that. Jacinta, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Thank you for, again, just being open and vulnerable with us. A lot of what you've shared today, I know, is going to be really helpful because everybody in some way has been touched by some sort of mental health journey, or somebody in their sphere of influence that has. Just your input and kind of advice and thoughts on that have been really helpful for many people listening. So thank you again for taking your time. And we're so glad that you decided to jump on here and have a chat.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew.
Well, I hope that interview was as inspiring for you as it was for me. I know that Jacinta would love to hear from you if you want to reach out to her and connect with her. That's pretty much it for episode 5. As always, this podcast is successful because you recommend it to others, you share the link on your social media, and you subscribe. So I just encourage you to do that if you've enjoyed this episode. And equally, I would love to hear from you if you have any comments about this podcast, or in particular, if you have any suggestions for other people that I could be connecting with in the near future to interview. So you can reach out and email me on contact@abrokenhallelujah.com, and I'll do my best to get back to you as soon as possible. In our upcoming 6th episode, I get to speak to a gentleman by the name of Daniel Brolins. He's a pastor based in Bangkok, and he was kidnapped by a terrorist organization and held captive with his wife for over 160 days. And I can't wait to share with you his crazy story and all that he's learned about God in the midst of that. So that's coming up in our next episode. Until then, be safe, be happy, and I look forward to having you back real soon. Thanks, everyone.